Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Continuing the discussion of how the past of ISKCON affects the present. It's not such a distant past. Just a correction. Yesterday I said I first went to America in 1986. It was actually 1996. Which makes a difference. 10 years in the frenzied life of ISKCON makes a difference. Now it's not so frenzied. It's becoming more staid in its old age. The cult scare had died down, but then in, I believe it was 95, it flared up again with some shootout in Texas, Camp David. There was some cult in which there was a siege in which the FBI surrounded the campus of that cult, and then eventually the FBI went in with guns blazing and killed a whole bunch of people. In retrospect, from reports, well, their official report was that the Camp David people attacked first, but there are others who say no, it was around the other way. Anyway, whatever. It didn't look good for ISKCON because we were perceived as a cult. Now, a major factor in changing the ethos and outlook of ISKCON was the communications ministry, and continues to be, and deliberately so. They had a mission, and have a mission. It started off as a public relations department, with the idea that, hey, we're getting all this bad publicity, bad press, we need to get some serious public relations going on. But then after a short time, it was decided, actually, public relations, this term's on its way out, because it sounds like what is colloquially called putting a spin on. And then you I'm sorry, I don't know how to say it in Croatian. You'll find that politicians who have their advisors what to say, how to deal with the press and this, these people are sarcastically called spin doctors. How to make things look good when they're not good. So that's the connotation that goes with public relations. So the name was changed to communications, which is actually in a more complete term also, because it's not the communications ministry took on the task not only of, from their point of view, informing the public about all the good things we're doing and trying to give another perspective on the bad things. Well, we're not so bad after all. We're trying to make things better. Hello, Hare Krishna. Not friendly. Didn't do our public relations properly. We're a cult. Why should he wave back? But the idea was to educate the devotees. Hey, look, you got to get your act together, folks. Stop doing all these things which burn the public out. And seminars, they had their office in Washington, D.C., as far as I remember, or close by. And they also sent representatives around the world to train the devotees, and it's still going on to the present day. It's called ISKCON Leeds now. Train the devotees what to say when you're asked about this, 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 and that. And especially when there was some public relations crisis, then the communications ministry get into top gear, make a press statement. But they trained the local devotees also in place. They had publicity packs, not exactly public, press packs. They trained the devotees how to deal with the press. You have to, don't just go to them when there's a crisis. You have to cultivate them and give them prasadam. The press people make friends with them. Now, one major role that the communications ministry played was in publishing the ISKCON World Review. Do you remember saying that, the ISKCON World Review? I believe it started in the early 1980s and went on probably for about 10 years. And it was sent free to all ISKCON temples, and they encouraged the temples to purchase more for sending to the parents of devotees and to important people in the area. And they also took sponsorship so that they could send it to important people, just like governors of states and Senate members in the United States and Congress members. To press people. So the ISKCON World Review, it epitomized what the communications ministry was aiming at. It sought to present, it gave news of, I can't remember, it was weekly, fortnightly, I think it was fortnightly or monthly or whatever. It was an interesting read because it had news from devotees all over the world. Remember, this was before the internet age, and we didn't know what was going on. And they're trying to, amidst all this bad things going on, devotees tended to hear about guru fall downs and all the bad things are going on. Hey, there are a lot of good things going on. Rasiyatra, 5,000 people fed, and new temple opens, and this and that, and so many things going on. So he's giving the good news. And also, but it wasn't just giving news, it was also had an advertisements section. And another point was to make the devotees feel that they're part of a worldwide movement. But there was also reporting on people, non-devotees, who it was felt that they were promoting good things in the world, that devotees could team up with them. For instance, animal rights activists, promoters of vegetarianism, environmentalism, and they report how devotees would, they encourage devotees to work hand in hand with these people. I remember one thing that particularly shocked me at the time. There was a review of a CD, I believe it was. I can't remember what the technology was. It was a CD of some devotee playing some rock style, whatever, songs or whatever it was. And it praised it said, doing riffs just like Hendrixian style. In other words, in the style of Jimi Hendrix, as if that was something great. You know, it's a very good very good guitar player reminds us of Jimi Hendrix. And that's supposed to be something good? I presume you've all heard of Jimi Hendrix. He's a big demon, actually. Very big demon. One of his albums had the picture of the... They used to have the record albums. So on the cover, there was a picture of the universal form. And then the front picture was his head. That was the photo done. Another picture, another one of his was Electric Ladyland, it was called. I happen to remember these things, unfortunately. In which on the cover, they had just all nude women, which was considered something quite unusual at the time, quite shocking. So anyway, and of course I knew that, as any unfortunate person who was saved by Prabhupada's mercy, or anyone from our generation practically knew about Jimi Hendrix, and even the style of his music, things that came later were much more heavy, but it was really, he was unique, he was an innovator for the hellish rock music. So to say that our devotees are producing music with Hendrixian riffs or something like this, that was a shocker. And then there was a report how there was a devotee chess champion. And so the message was there. It was promoting that, hey, we're here, we're not so different from all of you. We have a message that we're into animal rights and actually, we're not into animal rights per se. It's not the central part of our message. Animal rights and the message was there the message was there that we are interacting with members of the society. We have a message. We can interact. We can be part of your society, but we want to change things also. We have a message. So definitely there was a message there, but it wasn't exactly Prabhupada's message. In fact, in one letter that Srila Prabhupada sent, of course this was, it turned out the 1980s, it's after Srila Prabhupada's departure from this world, Srila Prabhupada sent a letter in which he was saying that we're not going to mix up or promote environmental activists. He said, that's not our message. There's a letter to that effect, which I included in the book. I quoted in the book on speaking strongly in Srila Prabhupada's service with the idea that we should get back to the message that Srila Prabhupada gave us instead of someone else's message, the partial message. Some other important thing was going on. I mentioned that in passing, but it was a big thing in the ISKCON world, and it did come to the attention of the press also, with help, no doubt, from the communications ministry, which set up its branches in different countries. The struggle for the freedom of of religion of the Soviet devotees. So that was a big thing that was promoted there through the ISKCON world. There were all kinds of things. And in South Africa at that time, the apartheid was collapsing, and how devotees were interacting with Nelson Mandela, who's promoted as some, up to the present time, he's promoted as some great guy, because he struggled for peace and this and that. So these are the kind of things in ISKCON World Review. And clearly they had an agenda to change the way that devotees perceived the movement and how they projected the movement. They wanted to change the movement, and to a large extent they have been instrumental in doing so and continue. The original devotee there was Mukunda Maharaj, and now the czar, if you will, of the communications worldwide is Anuttama Prabhu. So another, very, very instrumental in promoting all kinds of things which are not strictly in the line of Srila Prabhupada. You could maybe make a case that, maybe a little bit of mundane education here and there, little bit of rock music here and there is not so bad. But then when all of that overwhelms the real thing, the message of Bhagavad Gita as it is and Srimad Bhagavatam, when we become projected as a Krishna consciousness without Krishna, or just consciousness without Krishna, leadership for an age of higher consciousness, but where is the consciousness? Where's the Krishna consciousness? As we do see at the present time, some of our prominent leaders, they make a point of getting themselves on TV, probably paying to get on TV, and talking, but not talking about, maybe not even wearing tilak, because they don't want to present themselves as a devotee, talking something, but not Bhagavad Gita as it is. Maybe something which sounds nice, like you have to discover ourselves and whatever. So, another major factor in the change of ISKCON, and Burke Rochford has written quite a lot about this. Remember I mentioned him yesterday, the scholar, what happened that increasingly for working in America, especially in IT. What does that mean, IT? Something information technology. A large number of South Indian Brahmins, by Brahmin I mean by caste, they started to go to America and get well-paying jobs. Now remember, the temples were largely empty because for various factors which I've mentioned. There were just a few devotees valiantly struggling to keep them running on. So where does the money come from to run everything? So they looked to the Indians who are earning well. But soon they found that speaking in a very general way, but still I perceive it as a fact. If you find all the different, there's so many different kinds of Indians, in different castes, different parts of the country. But generally speaking, I would say, and I hope the rest of the people in India, including my disciples, don't curse me for saying this, but I would say the South Indian Brahmins, they're really top class. Best, maybe you could say. They're mostly still all vegetarians, pious people. Although they go to America for money, they're not grossly materialistic like business type people. They're by family circumstances or whatever, they have to earn money. I'm not saying that they're not interested in money, but they're not the kind of grabbing mentality or cheating mentality. Very, very good people. Very cultured people in many ways. So it was soon discovered that these people, they not only can they give donations, but they can become devotees. Not full-time devotees in the temples. They're not going to be full-time, not much, but they're mostly family people also. And very good in that sense. They could give a good lesson to the Western devotees in as much as they get married, and mostly they stay married. They don't get divorced. And they look after their children nicely. I mean, they're very good people. So they became increasingly the attention of the movement in America went toward the Indians. And some of the Western devotees complained about that, that we feel out of place. We go to the temple and it's on Sunday. It was because mostly only on Sundays people went. And it's just a bunch of Indians. And what about us? What are they doing for us? Of course, they say, why are you just focusing on the Indians? Of course, earlier, no one said, well, why are you only focusing on the hippies? They didn't say that. Why are you only going to the Indians? Why don't you go to other people? But no one ever said, why don't you go to the Latinos, to the Negroes, or whatever they're called? Why don't you go to the blue-collar workers? I mean, actually, the hippie constituency was a very small one, if population-wise, percentage-wise. So I once asked Vaisheshika Prabhu, who you may know has organized book distribution, Weekend Warriors, with mostly Indian devotees taking books out, and to a large extent, they feel comfortable distributing books to other Indians, so the book distribution is going on. So I asked him once, it's a common question, that how is it that you're just concentrating on the Indians? He said, you ride the wave. That's the wave at the moment, just like Prabhupada rode the hippie wave. Prabhupada's original intention, it's very clear from his writings, is that he wanted to meet the more intellectual class and present Krishna consciousness to them. But Krishna sent him the hippies, who Prabhupada said they're 10th class. But anyway, he lifted them up. So, but that the hippie wave, as discussed previously, that resided. Hello, Hare Krishna. He waved back. Do you say hello in Croatian? Is it? It's adopted from English. Right? Yeah. So, lost my train of thought again. So the wave at the wave at that time was the Indians, and not only South Indian Brahmins, but there are others also. It depends where. Actually, I was talking about Vaisheshika Prabhu. He's there in the Bay Area, where Silicon Valley is there, and especially there. But there are so many Indians in America, and practically everywhere you go in the world. If there's some money there, there's going to be some Indians there, for sure. You don't see so many in Croatia. Not so much money here. Still there are a few. So that was another major factor which changed the ethos of ISKCON. And it became the movement catered to a large extent to the spiritual needs of the Indian community. And although some may complain, if that had not happened, I don't know what would have happened to ISKCON in the West. It was really, really in bad shape. It would be. So, it is in some ways also, but they brought some life. They're enthusiastic to be devotees, and in England, it was somewhat different. There were a different bunch of Indians. There were already some Gujaratis there and some Punjabis, and Punjabi Sikhs, but some Punjabi Hindus also. But then, at some point, when was that? In the 1970s, a huge influx of Gujarati Hindus, but they're actually born in Africa, in Uganda. But the Gujarati, absolutely, by culture and everything, by language, and they were booted out of Uganda by Idi Amin, the Rakshasa, Prabhupada called him, and literally he ate human flesh. He was real, one of the great unsung demons of the 20th century. Make Stalin look like a choir boy. Stalin. Well, maybe not. Difficult to make Stalin look like a choir boy. So they were kicked out with nothing except the clothes on their bodies. Every bit of wealth was taken away, even the women's nose rings, gold, that was removed, and then they were thrown out. So they arrived in Britain, and also very good people. They arrived with nothing, and they started off with menial jobs, but within one generation, they'd set themselves up in small businesses. In America, it's small businesses, and the present generation of Gujaratis in Britain, that means the children of those who came at that time in the 1970s, many of them have become professionals, doctors, lawyers, this and that, because they saw how hard their parents worked and they just wanted a 9-to-5 job. But good, very good people. And in America also, the Gujarati Patels, Patel is one community, originally farmers. Patel literally means the head man of a village. That was the original caste, and then they became business people, and so in America also they call them Motel Patel, because the Patels bought up motels all over America, and so they're very helpful also, but numerically not so many as the South Indian Brahmins. Mostly Brahmins went to America, because they're very intelligent people, and they have the culture of study. Instead of studying Shastra, they're studying computer science. So they became sought after in America for that. So, yeah, in England also, the movement became very much Hinduized, or Gujarati Hinduized, to be more precise. And although there aren't so many Hindus in other parts of Europe, we find that just like now in Paris, the temple is being run by Tamil people, Sri Lankan Tamils, and they're also the influence is there. Wherever they're Indians, they respond to this movement. In Australia, in New Zealand, and become devotees. So that was a major change, because the movement then it was not so much about making, well, for better or for worse, the preaching became more focused on the Indians. Like they say, they're the most interested. So those are the people we should cater to. And preaching to Westerners, well, that should be there, but when you only have limited manpower, how much can you do? And when you find with the Westerners, it's very difficult to bring them in compared to the Indians, and then to train them, and then they bloop after some time anyway, mostly. Whereas the Indians don't. Hare Krishna. They take to Krishna consciousness, and they remain in Krishna consciousness, mostly. So the shift became to the Indians, and such pleasant people. You're not going to find people who are crazy on drugs among the Indians, very, very rare. very polite and cultured, and so naturally the devotees those who are left in the temples, who are still carrying on with great, naturally they welcomed and cultivated, and then the tenor of the movement changed, because you're dealing with a very different type of people to the Western people, and the West also, as I mentioned yesterday, the generations change. They call it, there was the hippie generation, then the yuppie generation, and then there was the Generation X and the Centennials. I don't even know what are the I've heard of these names, but I don't know what exactly is the psyche that goes with all of them. One of them, I think, Centennial, they said, is the most narcissistic in the history of the world. It's all about me, 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 and me. I can't remember. It's either Generation X. What is Generation X? That means 1990s, is it, or what? Any idea? You don't know. You don't know that. It's something in America. They call every 10 years, they say that the people are different. They're different outlook, just like the hippies were very, very different to the yuppies, and then there's this and that, and so yeah. Then the devotees who had joined in the 60s and 70s, they were the youth in the generation. Maybe that was the first time the phrase came up, the generation gap. Because the young people at that time, they couldn't relate to their parents. And there was this Bob Dylan song that your sons and your daughters are beyond your control because the times they are changing, something like that. Can't remember it all, so no need to. But then the devotees who never trust anyone over 30, that was a hippie saying. The pop group The Who said in one song, "My generation," they sung, "I hope I die before I get old." Well, he's still alive. He must be, I guess he is, 70 something old. I think that's Pete Townshend, but he's also a lifelong follower of Meher Baba, who's really bogus. I mean, it's amazing how bogus the Indian gurus can be. And the people would follow them. He died in a car crash in America. He looked more like a clown than a guru. He's a little fatty with a funny mustache. Anyway, some people thought he was God. He did. God died in a car crash. Self-proclaimed God. Anyway, I'm getting off topic here. So yeah, the devotees found themselves on the wrong side of the if you want to call it that, the wrong side of the generation gap. And they found that the kids coming up, they couldn't relate to them. That was the whole thing, that our kid, as young people, the parents couldn't relate to the young people who became the devotees, and therefore one of the volumes of Prabhupada Lilamrita is entitled "Only He Could Lead Them," because they weren't going to be led by the educationalists or the politicians or their parents or the military or the government. The hippies are dropped out of society. What is it? Tune in, turn on, and drop out. Timothy Leary's saying. Yeah. But the devotees, they found themselves on the wrong side of the wrong side means they didn't know how to relate to the young people. So, but they could relate very well with the Indian people. So the movement became, to a large extent, Hinduized. Means catering to people who come maybe once a week, maybe twice a week, mostly on Sundays because they're busy working. And congregational preaching became the main focus because we're not making full-time devotees. And in many cases, they don't even want to make full-time devotees. If someone wants to come and join, they don't want them to join because there's no one to look after. The temple president works a full-time job in many cases. He's not living in the temple. They just have a few devotees living in the temple. I was saying there are very few devotees in the temple. How do you run on the deity worship and everything? You import brahmanas from Mexico, from Bengal, from India especially, Bengali. And eventually there are from Russia. There was a... So they'd import devotees, and paying devotees became the main mode of running on temples. And you'd see advertisements in the ISKCON World Review for temple president sought for this job, $20,000 a month, negotiable, something like that. You'd find advertisements like that. Free car. Hare Krishna. Free car, accommodation, there's a job description given, or cook needed for such and such a restaurant, and this and that. So paid, and then so many Bengali devotees came, and after 3 years or so, they could get their green card, which means they could get residential status, and then they'd move out and become taxi drivers or selling paraphernalia on the beach and this and that. They didn't stop being devotees, but they had some... They came to America with the intention of getting a green card and earning money. And most of them, in earning money, they bought land in Mayapur and they built a house for their wife and children and their mother and father. So it's not that they... It's not that they were totally materialistic and they are only interested in money, but they're devotees, but they had some other agenda apart from pure devotional service. Or maybe they did want have a agenda, but they had other motives in coming to America apart from serving in the temple. And they did their service in temple mostly very well, as long as they were doing it. But then they moved out. So we had the temples run on mostly by paid staff. And naturally then, even if you want to try to get Western people to come and join, what kind of atmosphere is there? The atmosphere of surrender is not going to be there, because the devotees who are there, they're not fully into surrender to the situation and push the movement forward. Their agenda is that we're here to serve, but we have our own, we have some personal needs also. So they couldn't or wouldn't give themselves fully. And then there may be mixed motives also. They're different. Everyone's not the same, obviously. So some would be, I don't know, looking at the cricket match and this and that, and whatever. Here's an important point, which I thought about a little later. That another major innovation in ISKCON at that time was the Food for Life program. And this was much promoted through the ISKCON World Review. Probably it was hatched with the idea of the communications department also. So the idea was that we're getting so much bad publicity, we have to do something that will give us good publicity. So the idea came to start distributing food, prasadam, to needy people in different parts of the world. So the devotees started this, and regular feeding the poor in various countries throughout the world, and also when there's some emergency, that developed more into emergency services, where devotees would go when there's some emergency spot, when there's a flood or an earthquake or something, devotees would go. That didn't develop so much, but the Food for Life developed, became a pretty big thing in ISKCON. It's not so big nowadays as it used to be. It's died down a bit. But the idea was that people should, the public should see us as good people. And it wasn't advertised, it wasn't stated as such in the ISKCON World Review, but I do remember reading it when it was just being introduced. It must have been in one of those press mail-outs that the devotees gave, there were certain matters that about strategy that would be sent out to the temples, not published in the ISKCON World Review. So the example was given of the Salvation Army, which is a Protestant group founded in England in the 19th century, of the members of which would go into the streets and sing songs about God, dressed in their quasi-military outfits, because they're called the Salvation Army. And they would go with trumpets and all things and sing songs, hymns about God. So the history was briefly recounted there, that when they first started doing this, that the public thought it was a big joke, and even sometimes they would react in an inimical way toward them. And therefore, they thought of doing something apart from singing in the street for the salvation of everyone. They started doing welfare works, such as feeding the poor and this and that. And so you see, and they became well accepted and much appreciated in England, and they spread to America. I think they're in all the Anglophile countries. So you can see the idea there, that our devotees, they do the same thing. They go out in the street and sing about God, and people laugh at us. They don't take us seriously, or sometimes they're inimical towards us. So let us do some welfare work, and then people will like us. So that became a big thing, a major part of ISKCON's outreach. That word started to be used, outreach. And it was successful in the sense that devotees would link up with government agencies or local administrative agencies who appreciated what the devotees were doing, and they would give, if there was some surplus butter, for instance, that they would give out to different organizations who were engaged in charitable works, they'd give to the devotees, and then the devotees would interact with other welfare groups about this problem and that problem, what to do. In some places they gave facilities. You take this old building which no one's using and you can use it for your Food for Life activity. So in terms of public appreciation, it certainly had a good job, and giving them prasadam, not everywhere. In Armenia, the devotees were distributing food to the poor and this and that, but that didn't stop one day the whole temple being attacked and vandalized, and the devotees severely beaten. And when the devotees called the police weren't interested to help, because they didn't like Hare Krishna either. The movements never recovered since that attack, even though they were doing a lot of food relief. In Chechnya, I believe it was, Georgia, they did devotees did prasadam distribution right through the war there, and they became well known and like that. Now, my observation about all this is that, going back to the analogy of the Salvation Army, when people think of the Salvation Army nowadays, they don't think about a missionary group who want to give everyone the message of Jesus, which they started out with. They think of them as a charitable organization. And if you have a whole bunch of junk, old thing, you know, people accumulate old things in their houses, old clothes, old books, things they don't need, and they may just decide to clear it out, or someone dies, or they're moving their, or someone's moving their house, and they want to get rid of a whole bunch of stuff. They call in a charity. Here, you take it and sell it in your second-hand shop. So Salvation Army is one of the one. In England, Oxfam and Salvation Army, these are the ones that people give it to. So people, that's the problem with such an approach, that if you present yourself as a social welfare organization and you make that became, well, in the vision of many of the public, that became the main front of the devotees. And that is the possible danger of doing that, especially as our Harinam was decreasing, devotees going out in devotee clothes like that. So we may, by doing that, lose our soul or lose our mission. Prasadam distribution is good. Of course, there is a letter from Srila Prabhupada to Jayapataka Maharaj. He says about, Srila Prabhupada says about distributing prasadam, but he says to not go to the emergency spot. And there's another one too, I believe it is in Gurudas in Chennai, where Srila Prabhupada says that distributing food without chanting the holy names and without giving spiritual instruction is nonsense. So Srila Prabhupada didn't want that the devotees just distribute. Even prasadam, he wanted that it be accompanied by the holy names and some spiritual instruction. So the idea was that to make an image of the devotees as being compassionate, because compassion is kripalu akrita. In all the qualities of the 26 qualities of a devotee, mentioned by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the first one is kripalu, merciful. So they wanted to promote that image. Like I say, that program's wound down a lot now. It's going on, the Food for Life. You can see their website. It's become a vegan enterprise. And it says, inspired by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta. That comes at the end of the introduction. Inspired by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder, Acharya of the Hare Krishna movement. But it's, I don't know, it's from ISKCON itself, we don't see so much of that, Food for Life. So that was a major thing, and that was very much promoted in the ISKCON World Review. There'd, every issue, they'd report on that, and they'd encourage devotees to set that up, and they would give ideas to devotees how they could publicize it like this. There are some programs going on like that. There's the Hare Krishna Food for All, which goes on in London. But they make it very clear that one thing the devotees would do, they'd go in regular Western dress and do this, and they'd give their kami names, and when they're interacting with these aid groups and the government, and often they wouldn't present themselves as devotees, so it'd be Hare Krishna Food for Life, and then just Food for Life, and then the fact that it was Hare Krishna became, they tried to hide that, so because they're afraid people might not like it or whatever. But the Hare Krishna, the Food for All in London, there's headed up by Parashuram Prabhu. I don't think I don't even know if he has any kami clothes, because he does everything in devotee clothes. So that's good. And I remember being in one of the last time visited Australia, which was a long time ago. We have fabulous restaurants down there. Well, I hope they're still fabulous. Really, really good restaurants. Govinda's, they had in Melbourne especially, because Kurma Prabhu was there as the head cook. Can you imagine? You can't imagine. It has to be experienced to understand. So he was the head cook there. And it was such a good restaurant that there'd be every day at midday there'd be a line of people up the stairs to come there, and all what we might call respectable people, because it's in, and the mayor of Melbourne would come and bring guests and this and that. So that was very good. And they had Gopals also, which was fixed price. I think it was $2.50 at the time, with a fixed menu, all you can eat. And still they made a profit. So that was considered to be something very good for the old people and students and people who don't have much money. So that was another thing that devotees were doing, and the effect of that may have contributed to what we might call the secularization of ISKCON, because devotees would go in kami clothes and talk about welfare activities and how we, but without introducing that we are actually devotees and we want to spread Krishna consciousness. And then, of course, the midday meals program was invented by the Ritvik Temple, and it's a huge thing all over India. Devotees distribute between the Ritvik anomaly and the regular ISKCON anomaly. They distribute well over 1 million plates of what's called prasad every day, but I don't know. I was told by someone who was involved in that it's they hire cooks and they may not be following all the regular principles. They may not be initiated devotees. It may not be offered and so on. So, but it's going on. Okay, Hare Krishna. The revolutionary spirit became compromised in the temples, and then we'd encourage the members of the congregation. We largely gave to the congregational devotees a message that they want to hear, and this became very prominent in India also, and it's going up to the present day, that be a good member of society, be a success, earn money, send your children to the best schools, and give money to the temple, and in this, and chant Hare Krishna at home. So that's mostly the message, that even the preaching to students, they'll tell them that, this is in India I'm talking about now, your studies is your devotional service. So you have to do well, because if you do well in college, then other people will think, oh, it's good to be a devotee because you get good marks. And then you go on to do a career, and your career is your devotional service. You have to go high up the ladder. So that's very appealing to people, because they get the idea it's your devotional service. That means it's pure, I'm going to go to Krishna. But at the same time, pandering to people's material desires. I want to be a success. I want to get ahead. I want to show myself. Even this whole thing about getting ahead and being a success, you can't relate to it at all, because there's no such thing as going ahead or being a success, hardly in Croatia, because previously there was socialism, communism, and there just isn't that kind of atmosphere or economic situation in Croatia. It's where there's no developed industry or there's... What success? You have a little farm, or you have some place on the, some hotel at some house on the Adriatic coast, and then you let it out to tourists, and economic development, there's not much chance for development. And one of the main things that our devotees are into here is in this country, or one of the things is getting some kind of organization and getting that does some good work and getting grants from the European Union. It's another kind of scam, almost. Not exactly. They do everything legally, but anyway, it's one way. Get some money from the European Union. It's very prominent in among the middle class in India, which is mostly who we preach to in India, the middle class, huge middle class, consumer class. We're not much concerned with the village people or the tribal people or the non-Hindus. We preach to these people. They love it. You tell them you be a material success and you get all the blessings. You'll be blessed. You go on a yatra once or twice a year, and that's it. But the problem is that there are many problems. One problem is that if you're going to be a success, you have to be materially motivated and work hard and long hours, and then you don't have time you don't have so much time for chanting your rounds or studying the shastra. Plus, of course, it creates a whole atmosphere where they get the idea that being materially successful is very important, which is not a fact. Srila Prabhupada's social scheme was varnashram, farms, simple living, high thinking, and the whole idea of being a success militates against simple living and high thinking. So in this way, we find now that our movement is promoting schools with the mundane curriculum, which Srila Prabhupada said, never do that. Never bring in the government curriculum. But we're promoting that. And so there are so many what could be called compromises. Now, another factor, as I see it, is that devotees were thinking, well, how can we preach? How can we reach out to the... Some devotees were thinking, well, how can we reach out to the Western people? It doesn't seem to be working. We're not getting through to them. And they see there are all these gurus, the Sri Shris and the... who else is there? All these New Age and yoga and this and that. And this is a big field. Many people in the West, Western people, are into yoga. And there are big gurus who... Sri Sri Ravi Shankar and Dalai Lama, very popular, well-known, especially Dalai Lama, not Sri Sri so much, but he's had a big effect all over the world. So then devotees are thinking, well, if they can do it, why can't we do it? Why can't... There's a huge field in the yoga, the yoga community or whatever, and New Age, and so... They're making contact with people. They're able to bring people in. Maybe we have to change our preaching style. Just like among the hippies, we used to tell them, stay high forever by chanting Hare Krishna. So maybe we need to change our language a bit and try to bring these people in. So then devotees started speaking somewhat in the language of introducing yoga classes, so that even there's a new temple or a new facility being built in somewhere in America, and they're building a yoga studio with the temple. That's considered their major part of preaching. I don't know if it still goes on, but in some places they have, because the... if you're going to have yoga classes in the temple, if the temple doesn't have that much facility, the obvious place to do it would be in the temple room, because it's the only big enough room. So there you have it. So there have photos have surfaced on the internet of yoga classes in front of the deities. So that's the idea. Bring people in yoga. People are interested in yoga, so teach them yoga, and then gradually you can. Mostly you'll find people who are into yoga, you can very easily engage them in kirtan. They'll like that. But then they don't really like the philosophy, generally, because if they're into anything, the yoga people, they're into spiritual things, but all very vague and non-committal, and this idea of being spiritual but not religious. That means you imagine yourself to be spiritual, but you don't follow anything or anyone. So this indirect preaching, bridge preaching, so on. What I understand, it began with this: the idea that we have to try and make some bridge to these people who we're not communicating with. They're on one side and we're on the other, and how are we going to get out there? But then we can see that although there haven't been startling effects in terms of making devotees and bringing people in, but rather than affecting the public so much, more we've affected with Krishna consciousness, more we've affected the devotees with yoga and New Age mumbo jumbo. So that we get preachers, wildly popular preachers on YouTube talking nonsense. It doesn't even sound anything like Krishna consciousness. And it's supposed to be devotees of Krishna, but you couldn't guess because they wouldn't say anything that would make you have any idea that they are devotees of Krishna. Probably at least one leader has attempted that seeing like Dalai Lama, Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, then you have to make a personality. People have to recognize you and become well known. So trying so hard to become well known and popular and recognized by the public, but for all the efforts, doesn't seem to have happened. I wanted to read something that just a couple of days ago I got a mail sent from a disciple of mine in America, from Indian background, Gujarati. It was on another topic, actually. But I just want to read part of what he wrote. Because talking about Varnashram and how, ISKCON and implementing Varnashram, particularly in the West. He writes here, he's discussion of some statement by Hridayananda Maharaj in his commentary on the 11th canto of Bhagavatam. So in this purport by H.H. Hridayananda Maharaj, the Varnashram system isn't rejected. Rather, it states that practicing the finer details of the Varnashram system might not be possible for members of ISKCON who are raised in families where the four regulative principles weren't followed. That doesn't imply that following the Varnashram system itself isn't possible for them. In fact, in the very next verse, the emphasis is given to the Varnashram system of occupational engagement based on one's nature. In the context of efforts in ISKCON to implement Varnashram, sincere followers of Srila Prabhupada, including many of our god siblings, are making an attempt towards that. One of the five factors for success of work is daivam, or the time factor. And he's quoting from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text 14. Daivam Chaivatra Panchamam. That's, what is it? The five factors of action. So one of them is Daiva. He's translated here as time. Prabhupada says the super soul. It could be translated either way. Just as the counterculture of the 60s, the hippie culture in America, was a favorable time for Krishna consciousness to explode, we are similarly approaching a critical and unprecedented era in history that will be suitable for propagation of Varnashram, as more and more major cities like Chennai, Durban, Mexico City, and others run out of water. He's mentioned Chennai, but there's several major, huge cities with more than 10 million population in India that are running dry of water. Chennai, Bangalore, Hyderabad, Ahmedabad, Pune, I'm not sure if that's 10 million population. Delhi, how are they running on in Delhi? It's huge. Delhi, if you take the national capital area here and there, must be running on 2 crores population, isn't it?
Yeah. Delhi NCR is 2 crores.
Yeah. NCR, yeah. National capital region. How are they going? Where's all the. It's coming from. They made all these dams. Yeah, but. How long can it go? And others run out of water. As employment is taken away by automation and AI, artificial intelligence. Self-driving cars coming up. You just press a button, home, and there's not the, what's that called, GSP or something? GPS, TomTom. It's not a TomTom which tells you how to drive. It takes you there itself. Jobs like those of accountants, fully replaced by computers. I guess his own job also. He's a data analyst. Yeah, it's quite possible, even in the next 1 or 2 years, that jobs like data analysis, that will be only done by computer programs. As frequency and severity of extreme weather due to sinful life increase, people will be forced to take shelter of the Varnashram system. I don't know about forced to take shelter of the Varnashram system, because people, they'll avoid it up to the last. Sinful, based on subsistence farming, that may come. This is completely off the topic, but in India, the government should immediately implement a food policy. They should stop growing water-sucking crops, just like in Maharashtra, which is one of the driest states. They're growing sugarcane. It's crazy. And growing rice everywhere. There's not enough water. They should grow millets, like ragi and jowar, bajra, so on. Anyway, it wouldn't be popular, but it should be done. Krishna himself, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, showed how to practice devotional service, and Srila Prabhupada, an empowered emissary. I wouldn't say he's an empowered emissary. He's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Senapati Bhakta. He's the commander-in-chief. Propagated Krishna consciousness worldwide. Similarly, Varnashram will surely be established by the efforts of an empowered emissary, and people will join by millions when the time is ripe. For now, the reality for many temples in the West is that they're challenged to get even 100 visitors on Sundays. Yeah, if you get 100 visitors, that's in many places, that's a good crowd. In Croatia, nothing like that. But when you say 100 visitors on Sundays, that means 95 Indians. And implementing Varnashram seems very difficult for societies that are struggling, simply keeping up with paying bills and maintaining temples. As indicated in the quote from the room conversation, which will follow, maintaining what was given by Srila Prabhupada would itself be challenging. What to speak about establishing Varnashram? Prabhupada. In this condition, this is October the 2nd, 1977, just less than 6 weeks before Srila Prabhupada departed this world. In this condition, even I cannot move my body on the bed. Only chance is that let me die a little peacefully without any anxiety. I have given in writing everything, whatever you wanted, my will, my executive power, everything. Disaster will happen if you cannot manage it. Tamal Krishna, Maharaj. Yes, we do not want any disaster to happen. Our only business as your sons and servants is to maintain what you have established. Even if we don't increase it, if we just maintain it, Prabhupada, yes. So, why has this gone so wishy-washy? They're very, Maya has infiltrated in various ways. I would be loath to say that all of the various changes that have been made with evil intent. Rather, we find devotees, they want to serve Srila Prabhupada's mission and trying to find the ways to do so. Srila Prabhupada himself said in the early days he was experimenting in bringing the Hare Krishna mantra to others. One major difference is that Srila Prabhupada was clearly guided by Krishna in all respects. And some things we've tried, they're really going nowhere, not to Krishna anyway. So what to do for the movement to get back on track? Well, it really requires the top leaders to take stock of the whole situation and do the needful. There's no sign of that happening very soon. They seem to think that everything's fine and wonderful. But when we see devotees who had so much mercy and knowledge from Prabhupada talking nonsense in the name of preaching, then it doesn't seem very fine and wonderful. And when we celebrate as a wonderful thing that in England, in the schools now, the children will be taught in the religious studies class that two examples of Hindu organizations in the modern age, one is Hare Krishna, ISKCON, and another is Sai Baba. And the devotees think, well, that's wonderful. It's celebrating. This is something very good. Something seriously wrong. It's very difficult. Even if the devotees decided right now, okay, let's get back to what we're supposed to be doing. Book distribution means Prabhupada's books, primarily. Not only Prabhupada's books, Prabhupada also himself wanted his disciples to write books, and he wanted, Srila Prabhupada himself promoted the scientific basis of Krishna consciousness, a book by Sarup Damodar Maharaj, and he also, that's just one example. There are so many examples, but primarily Prabhupada's books. Public Harinam, festivals in which they're clearly Hare Krishna festivals, farm communities, that's really what we need to be doing. Get the focus clearly back on pure devotional service. But in the meantime, we have the majority of devotees were brought into a movement which was preaching something off, tangential at best, from what Prabhupada taught. And so the majority of devotees in this movement think that, yeah, well, our movement's meant for feeding school children, and if the state government says we have to feed them eggs also, well, we can make some arrangement for that. That's going on. Eggs with the prasadam, if it's prasadam. And rock music and so many things. So it would be difficult to... We have to re-educate the whole movement. Anyway, in this regard, I would like to say that from time to time I give this kind of controversial talk. I don't know why it should be considered controversial, because to me it just seems very straightforward, but it is considered. And there is appreciation, mostly from God brothers, not so much God sisters. And from all the devotees who joined in the 1980s and maybe early 1990s and before all this massive compromise became the norm. But they're not so many. The majority of devotees joined later. And they think that all this, what's been going on is what it's supposed to be, and that's normal and that's right. So it would be very difficult to change all of this. But let's see. Everything's in Krishna's hands. We have to make our own effort, not that just we say we'll leave it to Krishna. In the case of Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to work with his godbrothers. He wasn't going to change the message of pure devotional service. For that matter, they also didn't change the message of pure devotional service in the Gauriya Math. It's just that they lost their spirit to a large extent due to so much infighting. But they don't preach any wrong philosophy, largely, in Gauriya Math. Gauriya Math branches and sub-branches. It's not, we say Gauriya Math, but it's not one entity. There's so many. So, Srila Prabhupada wanted to work with them, but eventually circumstances forced him to work separately. So it may happen like that, if ISKCON continues on its disaster course, then those who want to keep on promoting the same message of the parampara that Srila Prabhupada brought, notwithstanding our own individual weaknesses, we want to practice Krishna consciousness and propagate it in the way that Srila Prabhupada did, which is not monolithic, but there are definite parameters which the movement has, to a large extent, gone outside of. So it may be that some other movement will come up. I'm not myself, at least at this stage, going to promote one because, well, there are various factors. Why not? But the way it's going, I'm not so very hopeful of things getting back on track very soon. Hello. He's not friendly. So, with that, pessimistic. No, not pessimistic, because Priti Vite Ache Jata Nagara Adigram Savatya Prachahoibe Morna. Srila Prabhupada also said that this movement will spread. You can either take part in it or not. You can take the credit or not. So we can continue to try to push the right thing. And in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as I've often said, all of us put together are not powerful enough or stupid enough to stop Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire being fulfilled. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that preaching Krishna consciousness will go in every town and village. That will go on, either through this medium called ISKCON or somehow or other it will go on. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire will be fulfilled. Yeah, so any question? You had some question from yesterday. That was... It's a heavy one, huh? Opened a huge field for discussion. Shall we leave it till tomorrow because it's quite late? You're going to go back and cook a feast and this and that. Shall we have a discussion session tomorrow on this topic?
Maybe short lecture and more that we discuss about all these things.
So many things. But you know what? Thousands and thousands of hours have gone on discussing these topics among devotees privately. Mostly privately, not in any official forum. But you know what? It doesn't seem to make a hell of a lot of difference. The difference is out there on the street. Preaching. Do you want to leave this till tomorrow to discuss? Or, but we can do, but like I say, it's not going to make any... We can discuss till our tonsils fall out. But it won't make any difference to the powers that be or whatever. You can try. You can think of ways to try to get your communication across. I was talking about the communications ministry. Communication means we tell you. Not that sometimes they make a show of listening, but there's definitely an agenda and it's not going to be changed. The agenda is to become a religion. We've become a religion in the worst sense of the word. It's predicted by sociologists of religion. After the routinization of charisma, Max Weber wrote about that. The religions are founded by a charismatic figure, and then when he passes away with his charisma, then you have to institutionalize it, organize it. And then the aim of the leaders becomes to preserve the institution rather than to fulfill the aims of the founder. So, ISKCON's not new in this. It takes inspired figures to revive or the spirit, just like in Christianity, Martin Luther. Well, maybe that's not so good. Well, he was inspired. He wanted to take Christianity back to its roots as he understood it. He made a massive effect, which is going on to the present day. Jesus Christ himself was preaching among Jews, preaching to Jews among Jews. Some people say that he wasn't trying to start a new religion. He was preaching among Jews. And it was later Paul brought it to the Gentiles. And Paul invented Christianity, St. Paul, after Jesus had passed away. Christ never started Christianity. As you probably know, it's a well-known fact. So, we're going to solve all the problems, have a discussion. Is there any point? I'm just speaking, like I say, educationally, but do the best we can under the circumstances. That's right. Find good association. Go on. I do plan to give another talk from a completely different angle. Maybe I'll do that on Sunday evening. How to make ISKCON strong. And this will be all positive. So how about that? But a very different angle. It's not going to be pull down the GBC or nothing like that. Hare Krishna, Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa, Sindhubhyascha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnava.